Hi, last week's podcast on minor harmony covered a lot of ground, and I thought it'd be good if we could go back and see how this applies to a fairly straightforward song, and I've chosen Autumn Leaves. So let's first of all look at the meta structure of Autumn Leaves. It's a classic 32-bar song, and the form is AABC. So this means that the first 8 bars are pretty much the same as the second 8 bars, and then we have a B section that's different, and finally a C section that's different again. So this song can be found, the roadmap for this song can be found on page 81 in the Insights in Jazz book. So if you have a look at the roadmap, you'll see that the sections are laid out in 8-bar chunks, and the A, B, C sections are labeled down the left-hand side. So what bricks have we got in this song? Well, let's start by looking at the second A, because that's the A in its simplest form. It's got two bricks. The second brick is a cadence, which we've come across in previous podcasts. So this is a brick made up of 2-5-1, these chords, which are the most common chords in jazz. The difference here is that this cadence in the second half of the second A is colored blue in the roadmap because it's a cadence in a minor key. In this case, it's in G minor. So the 2 is an A half diminished, or an A minor 7 flat 5 as it's sometimes called. And this is instead of an A minor 7 that you'd see in a major key. The D7, I haven't put any alterations on, but in a minor key you'd expect to see some alterations such as sharp 9 or a D7 alt or something like that. And what this means is that you can alter some of the extensions to make it fit more with a minor key feel. Okay, so for example, in G minor, you might expect to see an E flat, so you might play D7 flat 9, but there are lots of other alternatives that you can do on that chord. Okay, so that's the simplest brick that we have. It's the cadence, and it occurs in the second half of the second A. It also occurs in the second half of the first A, but we'll talk about this later on. So the other brick in the A section is what's called an overrun, and this is a regular cadence 2-5-1 in this case it's in a major key, so there's no coloring. But after the 1, it continues round the cycle to put chord 4 in there as well. So this is an overrun in B flat major. Starts on 2 of B flat major, C minor 7, goes to 5 of B flat major, which is F7, then it reaches home 1, B flat major 7, and then it overruns to chord 4, E flat major 7. And the important thing to understand here is that the overrun is like a parenthesis, okay? It's not actually changing key to E flat. It's just going to another major chord that you find in a major key, which is on degree 4 of the major scale. Okay, so it's just another chord change that you can make, and it is actually optional. Hence the term overrun. So an overrun is a cadence which overruns from chord 1 to chord 4. Okay, so those are the bricks that are used in the A sections. And if we have a look at the bricks in the B section, we'll find that they're exactly the same ones that we've seen in the A section, except that they're in the other order. Okay, so the cadence in the minor key, colored blue, comes first, and the overrun in the major key comes second. That doesn't have coloring because it's in the major key. And then when we get to the C section, it's somewhat more complicated. So we'll talk about that in a minute. So let's go back to the A section and let's look at the joins that we have between the bricks. So again, looking at the second A, I've called the join between the overrun in B flat major and the cadence in G minor. I called this join a sidewinder. And there might be some confusion here because I consider the join in an overrun to be from the chord 1 rather than from the chord 4. So when I label this join, I'm ignoring the E flat major and I'm actually seeing that as a parenthesis, if you like. To me, the sound of the overrun is still that we're in B flat, and so the join feel to me is that we're joining from B flat major to the next chord in the next brick, which is A half diminished. And that is because the root note goes from B flat down a semitone to A, that join is a sidewinder. And as mentioned in the podcast on minor harmony, this sidewinder join is really important and very common indeed, because it's the one that takes you from a major tonality to its relative minor. So in this case, we're going from B flat major tonality to G minor tonality, and the sidewinder join gets us there. Okay, now at the end of the second A section, we have a Homer join, which takes us from G minor to an A half diminished, which is what the B section starts on. Now, the Homer is the join which allows us to merely restate the cadence that we've just stated before, if you like. So you finish on 1, and the Homer gets you to start on chord 2. So if you're joining regular cadences together with Homer joins, and you might not be, but you quite often are, then the Homer will get you back to where you started from, and hence the name Homer. So G minor with a Homer join gets us to A half diminished, which is a cadence which goes back to G minor. Okay, so that's really straightforward. Now in the B section, the join that we see in the middle is the high jump. And this is the other join that I mentioned in the podcast on minor harmony. And it's really important and very common too, because it's the join that takes you from a minor key to the relative major. So the sidewinder took us from B flat major to G minor, took us to the relative minor. The high jump join takes us from G minor to B flat major. If this obviously this only works if you're using regular cadences. If you're joining to other bricks, then you'll end up somewhere else. You need to bear that in mind. So the high jump join, G minor, upper fourth, that's what the high jump means. Start on C minor 7, F7, B flat major, and it gets us from G minor to B flat major. In the B section, this is also an overrun as before, but the E flat major is, as I said, a parenthesis, and it's just chord 4 of the key. It's worth saying at this point that if you stand back from the roadmap and you look at the meta view, you sort of squint your eyes and have a look at what you can see very roughly, you'll notice hopefully that in the two A sections, they're predominantly blue on the right-hand side and they're white on the left-hand side. So what we're seeing is that major on the left-hand side and minor on the right-hand side. In the B section, it's the other way around, so we're seeing blue on the left and white on the right, left being minor and right being major. And the C section, it's got some very common substitutions in this roadmap here that kind of clutter the thing up a bit. But what you would generally see in the C section, and maybe you can see this if you squint your eyes up a bit, is that most of the C section is actually in G minor. So the whole C section is pretty much blue. But because of substitutions, that's not quite as clear as it might be. But the idea is that once you've seen, these blues and whites in chunks like a Mondrian painting, the idea is that it helps you to remember actually, the tonality used in this song. And once you've grasped, the idea of major first half, minor second half, major first half, minor second half, minor first half, major second half, and then minor for the whole last eight. Once you've grasped that, it's much, much harder to get lost when you're playing over the changes in this song. Even if you don't get, every change in the particular key that you're playing in, it's much harder to get completely lost, and you'll very soon be back on track. And you just have to stop playing for a while. It's your choice whether you play notes or not. Stop playing for a while, realize where you are, and then you're back on track very quickly. So what do we have in the C section? It does actually start with a cadence to G minor, but because the G minor is part of another brick in the first half of the C section, I've called the first two chords a launcher. And what I mean by this is just, it's some sort of dominant harmony to get you somewhere else. So this is a launcher towards G minor, and it's the most obvious one. It's a 2-5. And other launchers might be just simply the D7 on its own, or you might have a tritone substitution. So you might see an A flat 7, that would also be a launcher, or you might break that down. You might see an E minor 7, A flat 7 as a launcher as well, that could get you to G minor. These are all just examples, but I use the term launcher a lot, as some dominant harmony way of getting you somewhere else. And maybe we'll talk about that in another podcast. So the second brick, in the second two measures of the C section is what I called the rainy approach. And that's because it's the chords that you see in a rainy cadence, the ones that lead to the final chord. So it's, when I say approach, I mean everything except for the final chord that resolves. So here, this is a substitution that's very commonly used in Autumn Leaves, and that's why I put it in as the standard changes in the book. So what it actually looks like is, typically the rainy cadence starting on G minor would actually be heading towards E flat major, whereas this one is actually heading towards an E flat 7 that's part of the final brick in the C section, which is what I call a nowhere cadence. A nowhere cadence is very similar to a regular cadence, but what happens is the chord 2 is tritone substituted, and you end up with the nowhere chord, which is on flat 6, the dominant 7 on flat 6, going to chord 5 and then to chord 1. So you get flat 6, 7, 5, 7, 1, and this is a nowhere cadence in G minor. Again, it's probably substitution of what was originally used when this song was written, but these are the chords which have been used for quite a long time now and become the kind of standard chords. Certainly, it's what Bill Evans plays on his classic trio recording. So those are the bricks in the C section. It's interesting to notice that there are no joins between those bricks because they all follow each other round the cycle, so there's no need to put special joins in there. So the final thing to look at, I think, that we haven't covered yet, is the launches, which occur at the end of the A section, the first A section, and also at the end of the C section. Now, this is what I call in the book a bootstrap launcher. Okay, now, again, these don't occur in the original harmony for this tune. So let's look at the end of the A section. We've got a G7 there, and we've got a join between the G minor and the G7 that says bootstrap. Now, the G7 is termed a launcher in the analysis here. Now, the idea is that we're going from G minor to the next brick that starts on C minor. Now, that is would normally be called a high jump join, and we've seen that already in the bridge, in the middle of the bridge. But for a bit of variation, what we've done here is we've changed the G minor on the seventh measure of the A section into a G7 on the eighth measure. And what this does is it gives us a nice stronger pull towards the next chord, C minor 7. This is quite a common device that's used, and so I termed it the bootstrap launcher, because what you're doing is you're turning a G minor into a G dominant 7, and that the effective join there is as though you were going from G minor to a D minor 7 followed by a G7, and that G minor to D minor 7 is up a fifth, which is the bootstrap join. It's the bootstrap join which is used normally, most commonly, to get you from chord 1 in a major key to chord 4, or to key 4, if you like. So you'll notice that this join gets you from G minor to C minor, which is a bit like going from, you know, chord minor 1 to chord minor 4. But of course, that's not what it's actually doing in this case, because of the difference between the relative major and the relative minors that's going on here. However, this bootstrap launcher device is used quite a lot, and you'll see it in other songs, such as Beautiful Love is a classic one in the first half of the A section of Beautiful Love. An exercise that I find useful is studying a roadmap such as this, and making sure that the whole thing is in your head, and then going to a piano or some other chordal instrument and playing the whole thing through, but in a different key from the one that's in the book or the one that you might know. The idea being that you're proving to yourself that you've understood the bricks and the joins and you've internalized them all. If you play it in the key that you know, or the key that you've read it in the book, then the danger is that you're still memorizing the absolute changes, and you haven't understood the structure and the bricks and the joins.
My name's John Elliott. I'm the author of Insights in Jazz, the book about how to remember jazz chord progressions, which is available from www.dropback.co.uk. If you've got any questions about the book or the method, then drop me an email at john@dropback.co.uk.